proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton, and I want to thank you for joining us today. Over the past few programs, we have discussed the very important subject that is central, I believe, to the eternal plan of God. We've been looking at the fact that Jerusalem and Israel are indeed inseparable. On our last program, we discussed that Jerusalem and Israel are inseparable because, first of all, of a historical right, and then secondly, of a spiritual right. Even as David established Jerusalem as Israel's national capital over 3,000 years ago, his son, Solomon, built the temple and made Jerusalem Israel's spiritual capital. The tabernacle and then the first and second temples were located in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the place of worship for the Jewish people. The highlight of worship here was centered upon the feast that God gave to Israel, according to Deuteronomy 16:16. And here it mentions that the Jewish men were to appear before the Lord three times a year during the special feasts of Passover, Pentecost, and also the Feast of Tabernacles. As we will see in a moment, Jerusalem will become the center of worship to the Lord. Today, many Christians from around the world visit Israel and tour the holy places. Those who return from these trips are never the same as they have walked in the steps of Jesus. Even though these times are joyous, it pales in comparison of the future time when Jesus the Messiah will rule and reign in Jerusalem, which is the eternal capital of Israel. So now let's focus our attention on the fact that Jerusalem and Israel are inseparable because of an eternal right. As King David established the national capital of Israel, and as Solomon established the spiritual capital, the Messiah will one day establish Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel. Psalm chapter 2 and verse 6 says, "Yet have I set my king upon the holy hill of Zion. It is in this city that the Prince of Peace will rule and reign with authority. From here, the law of the Lord will go forth into the whole world." In the future, the Messiah will fight and defeat all nations at Jerusalem, according to Zechariah chapter 4, verses 2 through 4. This is the same Jerusalem where the Messiah will rule and reign over the nation of Israel with a rod of iron during the millennial age, according to Psalm 2, verse 9. But it is the promise of an eternal city that gives hope and joy to each believer, Jew and Gentile. As the Talmud Berakot says, "Eternity means Jerusalem. This is the same city for which Abraham looked, a city whose builder and maker is God." The Bible declares that there will be a new Jerusalem built for the saints, according to Hebrews 12 and Revelation 21 and chapter 22. It is this hope that gives light to God's plan for the ages, beginning and ending in Jerusalem. In order to understand the historical, spiritual, and eternal Jerusalem, one must see that Israel is God's prophetic timepiece, because Jerusalem and Israel are indeed inseparable. But let's now turn our attention for a perspective on this issue for today. The Jewish people have been scattered abroad the face of the earth for almost 2,000 years, looking for hope, love, and the Messiah. Today, Jewish people are returning to their homeland according to Bible prophecy. Jerusalem is the focal point and desire of Jewish people everywhere. No matter where he is dispersed, the Jew may not be in Jerusalem, but Jerusalem is always in him. Probably the most powerful symbol of the bond between the Jewish people and Jerusalem takes place at a traditional Jewish wedding ceremony. At the end of the ceremony, the groom will break a glass, symbolizing the destruction of the temple. Such is the idea taken from the Psalm chapter 137, verses 5 and 6, where it says, "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy." As Jerusalem is at the heart of Israel, it must be a priority at the heart of every believer in the Messiah. After all, every person is commanded to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, according to Psalm 122, verse 6. This is a needful responsibility to perform until the Messiah comes and proves once and for all that Israel and Jerusalem are inseparable. Now, with this in mind, let's now go to our teacher, Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman, with today's Bible lesson.
Welcome back to our radio broadcast. Our subject is focused upon principles for conquering bad habits. Principle number 5 affirms that minor compromises can lead to major disasters. Ungodly people will never try to seek agreement by accommodating others of different beliefs. Instead, they will try to induce their adversaries to make concessions unto them. The proponents of a Christ-rejecting world system adopt these tactics in their dealings with believers. They might employ enticements such as these, quote, go along to get along, quote, or, quote, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, unquote. Such people might even put on an external veneer of Christianity, hoping to persuade believers to let down their guard against them. Christians can fall prey to engaging in theological compromise. Therefore, the writers of the New Testament warned their readers against those who would preach unbiblical doctrines. False teachers employ a similar modus operandi when they mingle with a body of believers. In the second chapter of his second epistle, Peter issued this warning. When they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through much wantonness, those that were clean escaped from them who live in error, unquote. Jude, in his epistle, added that, quote, these are murmurers, complainers, walking after their own lusts, and their mouth speaking great swelling words, having men's persons in admiration because of advantage, unquote. The book of Galatians illustrated the devastating effect that false teachers could have on a congregation. People who were known as Judaizers taught that individuals needed to keep the Mosaic law and receive circumcision in order to be saved. Paul and Barnabas had encountered such individuals in the city of Antioch. They brought up this matter about the Mosaic law and circumcision. They brought up this matter with the leaders of the church in Jerusalem. A council of believers held in Jerusalem supported Paul and Barnabas and sent back a letter of confirmation to the church in Antioch. Earlier on, Paul and Barnabas had established congregations in the cities of Galatia. Even there, Judaizers had influenced a number of believers to accept the idea that the works of the Mosaic law could justify someone. In the third chapter of the book of Galatians, Paul asked his audience, quote, this only what I learn of you. Received you the Spirit by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Unquote. He posed them another question, quote, are ye so foolish? Having begun in the Spirit, are ye now made perfect by the flesh? Unquote. The believers in Galatia erred by accepting the teachings of the Judaizers. This concession led to their abandoning the doctrine of justification by faith alone. A small compromise led to a greater one. Not all attempts at compromise derive from spiritual matters, though. The narrative of 1 Kings chapter 13 tells the story of a prophet whose ruin resulted from his willingness to deviate from the instructions that God gave him. God sent this prophet from the kingdom of Judah to deliver a message to King Jeroboam of Israel. Before that prophet left, God warned him not to eat bread, drink water, or return by the route from which he came. The prophet fulfilled his commission. On his way back to Judah, though, he chose to rest underneath an oak tree. This respite allowed an older prophet from Bethel to catch up with him. Had the emissary from Judah obeyed God in this manner, the subsequent tragedy he experienced would not have occurred. At first, the prophet from Judah refused the older man's invitation to come home with him and eat. The prophet from Bethel then told him, quote, I am a prophet also as thou art, and an angel spake unto me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with thee into thine house, that he may eat bread and drink water, unquote. The prophet from Judah acquiesced and returned to the older man's home. The author of 1 Kings remarked that the prophet from Bethel had actually lied to the prophet from Judah. However, that latter emissary never asked God about whether or not God had changed his plan. His prior lapse led to an even greater one. Instead of obeying God, the prophet from Judah did what he wanted to do. While he partook of the offered food and fellowship, the older man then gave him a message from God. Quote, forasmuch as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord, and hast not kept the commandment which the Lord thy God commanded thee, but camest back, and hast eaten bread and drunk water in the place, of the which the Lord did say unto thee, Eat no bread and drink no water. Thy carcass shall not come unto the sepulchre of thy fathers. Unquote. After the emissary of Judah departed the other prophet's house and resumed his journey, God sent a lion to kill him. Initially, the prophet from Judah had obeyed God. He did what God told him to do. Afterward, though, he made one concession after another. That latter disobedience led directly to his untimely death. Thus, a man with the potential to become another Elijah or Elisha wound up becoming a castaway. Why do those who compromise over small issues eventually do likewise over large ones? In the 16th chapter of Luke, Jesus Christ explained the principle underlying such behavior. Quote, He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is also unjust in much. Unquote. To put it another way, those individuals who consistently make concessions over small matters have demonstrated their willingness to do the same for weightier matters. Consider the behavior of Aaron, the high priest, during the incident of the golden calf. The 32nd chapter of Exodus described how Aaron reacted to the Israelites' demand that he make gods for them. According to Exodus chapter 24, Moses had instructed the elders of Israel, quote, Tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them. Unquote. Aaron thereby had a responsibility to represent Moses while the latter remained on Mount Sinai. That factor alone, to say nothing of familial loyalty, that factor alone should have prevented Aaron from turning away from Moses. Aaron began his spiritual descent by engaging in a small concession. Instead of rebuking his Jewish contemporaries for wanting to build an idol, he actually helped them in that quest. He first asked the Israelites to give him the golden earrings that they and their family members wore. Remember that God intended to use this gold to construct the tabernacle and its accessories, not to make a golden calf. Aaron, having obtained the gold, used it to fashion a golden calf. He then made an altar for that idol, after proclaiming the following day to be a feast unto God. Furthermore, according to the text, quote, Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among their enemies. Unquote. Every compromise that Aaron made in that situation put him in an increasingly tenuous position. He had to know that his actions offended God, yet he found it easier to acquiesce with the Israelites' demands than to take a stand against them and a stand for God. After Moses descended from Mount Sinai, he asked Aaron why the high priest had sinned. Aaron fixed the blame on the Israelites, saying, quote, Thou knowest the people that they are set on mischief, for they said unto me, Make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what has become of him. Unquote. Aaron minimized his own role in the rebellion. Quote, And I said unto them, Whosoever hath any gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me, then I cast it in the fire, and there came out this calf. Unquote. Aaron began his spiritual descent by making small concessions to the Israelites. They gathered their gold ornaments. Aaron further compromised by making a golden calf and then building an altar to it. When Moses confronted him about what he had done, Aaron refused to take any blame, instead imputing the Jewish nation. By making minor compromises, Aaron opened the door for himself to make greater concessions. Even though he would remain as the Jewish high priest, Aaron lost his influence over the Israelites. We thank you for listening to this radio broadcast. We invite you to return for future programs about principles for conquering bad habits.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.